Last week, you might remember, you might not, but you might remember I talked about apocalyptic literature. We were reading from Daniel 7 and talking about the weird and wonderful genre of literature called apocalyptic literature. And just as a recap to remind you about that, because it's also relevant for today's scriptures, apocalyptic means revelation. So when we look at the last book in our Bible in the New Testament, the Revelation of John, it's also sometimes in some versions called the Apocalypse of John. It's a revelation. It has to do with there having been hidden things that are now revealed. But in apocalyptic literature, those hidden things are never revealed in really obvious ways. They use symbols and metaphors. They're just full of those kind of things. And also apocalyptic literature, what it's doing is it's saying behind or beyond what's happening in the here and now, behind and underneath and beyond the historical events that are happening, there is a whole spiritual realm, and there are things happening in the supernatural world that kind of sit behind what we can see and what we know and what we're experiencing in the now. What's going on, and they're usually written in a time of crisis, apocalyptic literature, especially it was ancient Jewish, early Christian kind of literature, usually around a time of crisis in the nation. And it's mixed with what's really going on. So it goes back and forth. This is the spiritual realm. This is what's happening in the here and now. And it goes back and forth in there. One commentator, his name is Craddock, and he wrote this: amid painful and prolonged suffering, when there can be seen on the horizon of predictable history no relief from disaster, faith turns its face toward heaven, not only for a revelation of God's will, but also for a vision of the end of the present misery and the beginning of the age to come. That is really what apocalyptic literature is all about. It's about hope. It's about looking past all the challenges of the here and now to the promises that God has made. But it can be really hard to see hope in this kind of literature. In Luke 21, which Debbie just read for us, in the part before what she read, it's because the whole chapter really follows, it's very apocalyptic in the genre of literature. There were some people who were talking about how beautiful the temple was. They were going on and on about it, and it was beautiful. It was built from the finest materials by the most skilled craftsmen. It was something to behold. But in response to what he was hearing, Jesus had this to say to the people: as for these things that you see, the days will come when not one stone will be left upon another. All will be thrown down. Now, I'm guessing that probably most of us in this room have heard those words read at least maybe once in our lifetime, preached on maybe once. We've read them ourselves. We've heard them read. We know that the temple was torn down because the temple isn't still there. It's not still standing. Jesus was correct. But I think it's so important that we not rush over this prophetic statement, this promise, too easily. Because we look at it and we go, okay, Jesus said, yep, all you're taking all this glory and you're in the temple, it's going to be torn down. And we just take that as a historical thing. But I think that we need to put ourselves into the position of Jesus' listeners when we hear that. Now, we don't have a temple. Our place of worship is not beautiful like the temple was. Perhaps one day it was. It may have been beautiful. When Veronica and Ernest, when you walked down the aisle in that sanctuary and you were married in there, it was a beautiful space. But we know that those times are past. And yet, even saying that, aren't we all looking forward to a new, restored, beautiful building? Aren't we imagining the fresh paint, the electrical and plumbing work that's up to code? I know Debbie's looking forward to that. All the things. There's something that we're looking forward to in what this building is going to become. Now I want you to imagine that it's 2026, and we've moved into our beautiful, newly renovated space. Imagine that we're having a special service there, that we're having a dedication of the space to God kind of a service. Now imagine that in the middle of that service, when we're talking about how God has provided and we're talking about and dedicating all the parts of the building and all of those things, that we hear the voice of God booming into our celebration. And this is what that voice says. This building is going to be destroyed. After all your work, all the hope inspired by this new space, I tell you, not one brick will be left upon another. Wouldn't those be awful words? If we're in the middle of that, we've waited all this time, we've worked so hard, then we hear God say words like that. When Jesus told his listeners that their temple was going to be destroyed, it was even more awful, I think, than we can imagine. Because their temple was the home of God. If their temple was destroyed, it meant that God would no longer be present with his people. So imagine the horror of being abandoned by God. Imagine being told that not just the building was going to be taken down, but God was going to leave them, because that is what they would have heard in those words. That's what Jesus was promising. It makes sense then that what the people wanted in response to that, they wanted to know when this was going to happen. They wanted to know when this was going to come true. They needed to prepare themselves. They probably wanted assurances that Jesus was speaking of some distant future, sometime long after their bodies and those of their children's children would be dust. Jesus, in his response, he spoke to them of wars and rumors of wars. He spoke to them of insurrections and natural disasters like earthquakes and plagues. He told them that those who were his disciples would be persecuted. They'd be betrayed by those they loved. They'd be arrested. They'd be executed. You notice that Jesus doesn't promise that his followers will be exempt from the suffering to come. He's not promising that believers are going to be removed from the world before things get really bad. He painted a picture of the holy city of Jerusalem, surrounded by armies, and God's people fleeing into the mountains in fear. He said this in Luke 21:23. He said this: "Woe to those who are pregnant and those who are nursing infants in those days, for there will be great distress on the earth and wrath against this people." He went on to say, "People will faint from fear and foreboding of what is coming upon the world, for the powers of the heavens will be shaken." This is not a pretty picture. These were not the kind of words that inspired love and devotion. These were the kind of words that inspired fear and despair. "This building is going to be destroyed," he said. "Hear all the horrors that are coming." I wonder if maybe that was Jesus' intent, at least in part. I wonder if Jesus saw their self-assuredness, their cocky confidence, their abject self-reliance. And I wonder if he wanted to remind them that there was more to the world than what they could see or control. See, this is the nature of apocalyptic literature, and it's a little bit terrifying. But it's also about hope, because it never ends with the terrifying part. It moves on, it moves past that. Apocalyptic literature, like the words that Jesus spoke in Luke 21, also reveals God's salvation, the end of the suffering, the beginning of the age to come when there'll be no more mourning or crying or pain. We hear that in Luke 21 again in verse 27, words that follow immediately after Jesus told them that people are going to faint from fear and foreboding at what's coming. Jesus said this to them: "Then they will see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with power and great glory." This Son of Man coming in a cloud is the same one like a human being that we heard Daniel speak of last week. This is what we read in Daniel 7, 13 to 14 last week. "I saw one like a human being," or one like a Son of Man, "coming with the clouds of heaven. And he came to the Ancient One and was presented before him. To him was given dominion and glory and kingship, that all peoples, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion that shall not pass away, and his kingdom is one that shall never be destroyed." This is hope. This is the promise that we cling to, isn't it? Yes, there is going to be suffering and violence. Yes, there will be liars and warmongers, earthquakes and floods and plagues, but there will also be salvation. There will be God on his throne in a kingdom that will be everlasting, that will never be destroyed. This is our hope. There's a lot to be afraid of in our world today, isn't there? According to the Canadian Food Grains Bank, writing back at the beginning of September of this year, about 41 million people in our world are at risk of starving to death in 2021. A huge swath of Canada continues to endure severe drought conditions, even as southern BC is suffering from devastating flooding. War, insurrection, centuries-old conflicts, Afghanistan, Palestine, Sudan, Yemen, Myanmar, the list goes on and on and on. And a global pandemic, a disease that has caused at least 5.2 million deaths around the world so far. That, just to put it in perspective, that's like coming up towards the entire population of the GTA in just over a year and a half. There's a lot to be afraid of in our world today. I'm not surprised that we tend to read Jesus' words here in Luke 21 as though they're directly relevant to our world in 2021. I'm not surprised to hear people talking as if the world will end any day now. Of course, the things we're terrified of in our world, they aren't new. The specifics might be different, but as the author of Ecclesiastes wrote, there is nothing new under the sun. See, our world has always been plagued by sin. Sin, which is the infection of our world that has been since Adam and Eve were cast out of the Garden of Eden. It's the darkness in which all the evil things hide. It's the shadows in which lurks the evil one himself, playing with humanity as a cat plays with a mouse. The world has suffered. There has been wars and rumors of wars and insurrections and droughts and earthquakes and pandemics and plagues from almost the beginning. But none of that is ever the end of the story. Jesus didn't say the things that he said so that we'd be all terrified all the time. He didn't say what he said so that we would carefully protect ourselves, so that we would hide away until we're magically whisked into the clouds one day. He said what he said so that we would have hope. All the scary things he warned us of, they weren't unknown to those to whom he was speaking. They aren't unknown to us. They weren't surprised to hear him say what he said. He was just painting a picture of how things were, of how things are. The thing that they needed to hear, and I think that we need to hear, is the same thing that Jeremiah's people needed to hear. It's the same thing that Daniel's people needed to hear. It's the same thing that we need to hear over and over again. When all of these things take place, you will see the Son of Man coming on a cloud with power and great glory to establish his kingdom on earth as it is in heaven. This is the promise. This is the hope. When these things take place, Jesus goes on in verse 28, when these things take place, stand up, raise your heads, because your redemption is drawing near. Stand up, raise your heads, hold your heads high. You have not been abandoned by God. Whatever comes, God is not undone by it. Whatever frightens you, God cannot be defeated by it. And so we come on this first Sunday of Advent, our Sunday of hope. And it's appropriate. It's appropriate that we name the things. It's appropriate that we lament the things that are wrong and awful in our world. But we must never stay there. We are not a people of fear. We are not a people to be cowering and hiding in the shadows because we are afraid of what's going on in the world, because we are a people of hope. And we've seen in Jesus born in that stable so long ago that we celebrate at Christmas, we see the foreshadowing of what's coming when God's kingdom is going to, it's like the Revelation paints a picture of the New Jerusalem, this holy city descending from the clouds, when all people will bow their knee and all people will declare Jesus Lord of Lords and King of Kings. We're gonna sing a song that we sang all through Advent last year. I'm hoping you remember it. It maybe spark something in your memory as we sing it together. It's called Take Heart, and It says exactly what Jesus and Jeremiah both had to say in today's scriptures. The words in it, take heart, don't fear. Things are hard, but Christ has already won. That's the message of the Sunday of Hope. That is the message of this song. That's what I hope that you carry with you from here. That whatever you see around you, whatever fears you feel going with you, our God is a God who can be counted on. Christ has already won the battle.